Today is Wednesday, February the 12th, 2025. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Many of us are reminded of the importance of warmth and comfort. Unfortunately, not everyone has access to proper winter clothing. Donating winter coats helps those in need stay warm during the colder months. By donating your gently used or new winter coats, you contribute to the community support initiatives that aim to keep vulnerable populations safe and warm during the harsh winter conditions. Contact local charities and organizations that accept clothing donations. You can use search engines by typing in the keywords such as winter coat donation near me, or you can type in coat drive near me for more targeted results. Big tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, prn.live, that's prn.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. ChatGPT search just became a serious Google rival. OpenAI just announced that you can now use ChatGPT search without logging in, making it a more viable alternative to Google. OpenAI just removed the sign-in requirement for ChatGPT search, making it accessible to everyone on ChatGPT.com. The update strengthens ChatGPT's position as a direct alternative to Google. Things are moving fast at OpenAI. OpenAI introduced its web search feature to ChatGPT Plus subscribers in late October and then expanded it to free users in December. But it wasn't stopping there. The final barrier was removed, and users can now access ChatGPT search without even signing in. The update was announced by OpenAI on X. ChatGPT search is now available to everyone on ChatGPT.com, no sign-up required. It's a logical step. By removing the need for an account, OpenAI is positioning ChatGPT as a more direct alternative to traditional search engines like Google. Many internet users have already switched to ChatGPT for web searches as results aren't scattered with advertisements, and this removes another friction layer. It also means users who are hesitant to commit to an OpenAI account can test the service more casually. The service worked as advertised. It provided an AI-generated summary answer to the question and cited the web sources. It remains to be seen how this change will affect engagement and user adoption. While it could attract a wider audience, some features such as personalized conversations and memory may remain exclusive to logged-in users. OpenAI hasn't indicated any limits on the number of searches available to guests or if other restrictions will apply. DeepSeek creates a digital fingerprint of each user. Experts reveal chilling link between DeepSeek AI bot and the Chinese government allowing them to see user data. DeepSeek has over 10 million downloads as of January 2025, according to data company DemandSage. AI chatbot DeepSeek could be sending user login information straight to the Chinese government, cybersecurity researchers have claimed. The new chatbot is the top downloaded app in Apple's App Store in the UK, US, and China after its launch in January. In its privacy policy, DeepSeek has acknowledged storing data on service inside the People's Republic of China. The service is similar to OpenAI's ChatGPT, a chatbot that answers pretty much any question you throw at it. But DeepSeek, which has garnered blistering popularity in recent weeks, has rattled security experts and free speech advocates. Ivan Sarini, CEO of Firuit Security, told ABC News that DeepSeek has computer code that could send some user log information to a state-owned telecoms company. When users are logging into DeepSeek's website, that website has pieces of software and technology embedded into it that has the ability to send information directly to China's mobile service cmpassport.com. This is something we've never seen before, where technology is built right into the service that has the ability to send information to China Mobile. China Mobile is a state-owned telecommunications company that is banned from doing business in the United States. The U.S. has previously put sanctions on the firm, claiming it has close ties to the Chinese military. In its privacy policy, DeepSeek has acknowledged storing data on servers inside the People's Republic of China. DeepSeek creates a digital fingerprint of each user, according to Sarini. This so-called digital fingerprint can allegedly be used to track users' activity across any other website where China Mobile or the Chinese government are able to collect information. What does that really mean? It is that the Chinese government could potentially survey Americans on any other websites once they have visited DeepSeek. They are able to track what we do, what we read, what we talk about. This is very alarming and something we've really never really seen before. Although it's not just Americans who are affected, but anyone who has created a DeepSeek login to use the service. DeepSeek has over 10 million downloads as of January 2025, according to data company DemandSage. Following independent analysis, fellow cybersecurity expert Joe Reardon of the University of Calgary told AP he didn't see login data being transferred from DeepSeek into China Mobile. However, he concluded that it is likely being activated for some users or some login methods. House lawmakers pushed to ban AI app DeepSeek from U.S. government devices. A bipartisan U.S. House proposed legislation to ban the Chinese artificial intelligence app DeepSeek from federal devices, similar to the policy already in place for the popular social media platform TikTok. Representatives Josh Gottheimer, Democrat of New Jersey, and Darren LaHood, Republican of Illinois, last Thursday introduced the No DeepSeek on Government Devices Act, which would ban federal employees from using the Chinese AI app on government-owned electronics. They cited the Chinese government's ability to use the app for surveillance and misinformation as reasons to keep it away from federal network. Gottheimer said, "The Chinese Communist government has made it abundantly clear that it will exploit any tool at its disposal to undermine our national security, spew harmful disinformation, and collect data on Americans. We simply can't risk the CCP infiltrating the devices of our government officials and jeopardizing our national security." The proposal comes after the Chinese software company in December published an AI model that performed at a competitive level with models developed by American companies like OpenAI, Meta, Alphabet, and others. DeepSeek purported to develop the model at a fraction of the cost of its American counterparts. A January research paper about DeepSeek's capabilities raised alarm bells and prompted debates among policymakers and leading Silicon Valley financiers and technologists. The Associated Press previously reported that DeepSeek has computer code that could send some user login information to a Chinese state-owned telecommunications company that has been barred from operating in the United States, according to security research firm Firuit. Ottheimer cited security concerns as the main reason for introducing the bill. He told the Associated Press, "It was enough of an alarm that I thought we should immediately ban it on all government devices and make it clear to the public of the risk. I think that's a critical first step." Americans should know the impact on their personal privacy and data, especially because we know that Americans are sharing proprietary information on AI chatbots, highly sensitive information, documents, contracts, and the like. All members of Congress should be briefed on DeepSeek surveillance capabilities and that Congress should further investigate its capabilities. The churn over AI is coming at a moment of heightened competition between the United States and China in a range of areas, including technological innovations. The United States has levied tariffs on Chinese goods, restricted Chinese tech firms like Huawei from being used in government systems, and banned the export of state-of-the-art microchips thought to be needed to develop the highest-end AI models. The bill would single out DeepSeek and any AI application developed by its parent company, the hedge fund High Flyer, as subject to the ban. The legislation includes exceptions for national security and research purposes that would allow federal employers to study DeepSeek. Several countries have moved to ban DeepSeek's AI chatbot, either entirely or on government devices, citing security concerns. Last month, Italy's Data Protection Authority blocked access to the application in a move it said would protect users' data and announced an investigation into the companies behind the chatbot. Taiwan announced this week that it banned government departments from using DeepSeek's AI. South Korea's industry ministry has also temporarily blocked employees' access to the app. This week, Australia announced that it banned DeepSeek from government systems and devices. And in Texas, Governor Greg Abbott issued an order banning both DeepSeek and RedNote, a Chinese TikTok alternative, from the state government's issued devices. Amazon is upping the ante in tech's great ample expense. The commerce cloud giant CEO Andy Jassy intimated Thursday, as the company reported fourth quarter earnings, that it would spend around $100 billion on capital expenditures this year. That's up around 29% from what Amazon spent in 2024, and roughly $20 billion to $25 billion ahead of what fellow cloud firms Microsoft and Google each plan to spend this year. And as with those firms, most of the money is going to artificial intelligence-related spending, and in Amazon's case, its cloud unit, AWS, Amazon Web Services. You can forget the notion that Chinese AI model DeepSeek's success in developing a competitive AI model on the cheap would prompt U.S. firms to pull back on AI investments. Jassy, when asked about the DeepSeek issue, repeated what his counterparts at Microsoft and Google, respectively, Satya Nadella and Sundar Pichai, have said in the past 10 days. The essence of that argument is that falling technology costs actually lead to greater spending on technology. CEO Andy Jassy of Amazon said, "What happens is companies will spend a lot less per unit of infrastructure, but then they get excited about what else they could build that they always thought was cost prohibitive before, and they usually end up spending a lot more in total on technology. And for that reason, big tech companies have to invest to ensure that they have the capacity to meet that moment." The uniform response from CEOs on this subject will likely fuel the argument of industry critics like former Federal Trade Commission Chair Lina Khan that tech companies act like a monolith rather than as independent companies competing with each other. There might be an element of groupthink here, to be sure, but given the risk of underinvesting, missing out on the potential business boom that AI could generate, it's hard to blame big tech for their AI splurge. Much of the business world has spent the past couple of weeks freaking out about Donald Trump's plans to impose new tariffs on goods coming in from China and various other countries. Tariffs should theoretically be a big problem for Amazon because its huge e-commerce business relies heavily on selling Chinese goods to American shoppers, but you wouldn't know it from the fourth quarter earnings call on Thursday. The word tariff didn't come up a single time on the call, as executives did not address the issue in their prepared remarks, and analysts chose to focus on topics like AI investments, robotics learning, and the company's relationship with United Parcel Service. One reason analysts aren't concerned could be that Amazon increasingly relies on outside merchants. 62% of the units sold on its e-commerce site in the fourth quarter came from third-party sellers rather than inventory Amazon stocks itself. That's the highest proportion ever. Those merchants would be the ones absorbing the hit from tariffs instead of Amazon. While tariffs would likely push up prices on Amazon's website, the company probably has less to worry about than retailers like Walmart or Target that rely much more on items they import themselves. DeepSeek goes 100% Chinese for AI inference as it uses controversial Huawei accelerators. DeepSeek's V3 and R1 models are available through Huawei's Ascend Cloud Service. They are powered by the Ascend 910X accelerators banned in the US, EU, and UK. The pricing is much lower than offered by Azure and AWS, who have started trialing DeepSeek. DeepSeek recently massively unsettled global markets with the launch of its own reasoning LLM, although OpenAI has since accused DeepSeek's developers of using its models to train theirs. A new paper had claimed DeepSeek's V3 LLM was trained on a cluster of just 2,048 NVIDIA H800 GPUs, crippled versions of the H100 designed to comply with U.S. export restrictions to China. Rumors around DeepSeek's newer reasoning model, R1, suggest it may have been trained on as many as 50,000 NVIDIA Hopper GPUs, including H100, H800, and the newer H20. Although DeepSeek hasn't and likely won't confirm this, if true, it raises serious questions about China's access to advanced AI hardware despite ongoing trade restrictions. Although it's no secret, there's a thriving black market for advanced NVIDIA AI hardware there. Now, in a move that's going to further shake Western firms, the South China Morning Post reports Huawei Technologies Cloud Computing Unit has partnered with Beijing-based AI infrastructure startup Silicon Flow to make DeepSeek's models available to end users for an incredibly low price. This collaboration, which was worked on during the Chinese Lunar New Year holidays, provides efficient, cost-effective access to DeepSeek's V3 and R1 models through Huawei's Ascend Cloud Service, which is powered by Huawei's own homegrown solutions, including the controversial Ascend 910X accelerators, which are banned in the US, UK, and Europe. Huawei has made no secret that it wants to become the Chinese NVIDIA, and Huawei's cloud claims its performance levels are comparable to those of models running on premium global GPUs. Silicon Flow, which hosts the DeepSeek models, has come out swinging with some aggressive pricing. Microsoft added DeepSeek to its Azure AI Foundry a few days ago, and Amazon swiftly followed suit, adding the large language module to its AWS Bedrock. It's early days for both cloud offerings, though, and they work out much more expensive than Silicon Flow's super low pricing. The collaboration between Huawei, Silicon Flow, and DeepSeek highlights China's broader strategy to strengthen its domestic AI capabilities while reducing reliance on NVIDIA hardware. The South China Morning Post notes, the move to launch DeepSeek's models on a homegrown hardware backbone highlights China's progress in cutting dependency on foreign technology and bolstering its domestic AI industry amid growing efforts by the U.S. to choke off China's access to high-end chips that the U.S. government said could be used to advance military aims. Comcast to lean into wireless amid broadband losses. The company shed 139,000 broadband subscribers in the fourth quarter of 2024. Comcast reported a loss of 139,000 broadband subscribers, worse than the already unexpectedly high December forecast of 100,000 that sent its stock tumbling. It added 307,000 mobile subscribers. The company offers the service through a deal with Verizon for a total of 7.8 million. Comcast President Mike Cavanaugh at the company's earnings call last Thursday said, "You will see us shift our strategy to package mobile with more of our higher-tier broadband products, both for new and many of our existing customers." The company's new converged packages are set to launch in the coming months in upgraded areas where Comcast can offer fixed broadband speeds more on par with fiber, about half its footprint. The plans would be simplified, aimed at reducing friction for subscribers, and that the company would aim to grow revenue from those customers at a faster clip. The big mobile carriers and Charter are already leaning into convergence, which appears to be better at keeping customers around than mobile or fixed broadband products alone. Comcast executives said they're still seeing headwinds on the fixed broadband front, stiff competition from fixed wireless offered by the mobile carriers and fiber overbuilding, plus the June 2024 shutdown of the low-income broadband subsidy that supported more than 1 million households. New Street Research analyst Jonathan Chaplin wrote in an investor note, "We and others had expected a return to growth at some point over the next 2 years, but that expectation started to evaporate as we gain a better understanding around the impact of immigration on household growth. Since early January, we have been warning that cable adds would likely stay negative for the next 4 years." Moffitt Nathanson analyst Craig Moffitt noted that the wireless carriers are pushing convergence offerings, but cable giants like Comcast are the ones with large national wireline footprints. The company counts more than 31 million total subscribers and more than 60 million passings. The telcos focus on convergence. If successful in training customers to buy broadband and wireless together, would only supercharge Comcast's growth. For the market to begin focusing on the wireless opportunity, broadband subscribers doesn't need to grow. It only needs to stabilize. Moffitt agreed subscriber losses have peaked, but that 2025 won't be great, just not as bad as 2024.
Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, IT professionals, and a lot of how that all intertwines. And I'm going to wrap up this series here. I started this 4 weeks ago, and I talked about an experience I had where I was working 90 hours a week on average, some a bit more, very few, less than that. And I burned out. And I'm going to tell you that from my personal experience that burnout does happen. And it happens. I am not saying that IT professionals are the only ones who burn out. I'm just saying that there's a lot of ability for IT professionals to do exactly that. And I want to give you some guidance here if you're feeling burned out, or if you know someone who's feeling burned out. These are different things that everybody needs to be aware of, they need to share. First off, an acknowledgement of burnout. And burnout is not a failure of the person who burned out. Burnout is not a personal failure. It is something that does happen. And there are things that need to change to fix that. There are reassessments, realignments. There are ways to do this, to get past this and to recover. And I found my own way out of that. And I did my own approach to this. But you have to get past that. The very first thing, you've got a problem, you've got to admit that you have that problem. Your employee has a problem, you've got to admit that you as a manager own part of that. Your manager has a problem, you need to see how you can help alleviate that problem. So part of this next step here is communication. It is talking about, hey, look, you've got a lot on your plate. Hey, I've got a lot on my plate. How can we shift all of this around? What can we move off of the plate? And this is adjusting workload. This is adjusting projects. This is making sure that the IT worker is able to get things done. They're brilliant people, and sometimes in the mix of all of the things that are going on, there are things that get lost along the way. And the IT folks are, you know, we're nerds. So we don't always recognize some of these things. And some of these things, we get wrapped up into it because it's cool and it's a feather in our cap, and we now have new knowledge and we have all of this stuff, and we start getting worked up and we get all engrossed in these things, and sometimes we lose track of time and all of these things start mounting up. So we have to address the workload. Next off, we have to think about stress management techniques. You notice I portrayed getting worked up. I got a little bit just remembering, and I was thinking about all of those different things. But we have to de-stress, and we have to find ways to escape the work world. And we have to find ways to help the manager or the employee to escape the work world. So there's a lot of this work-life balance that we talk about, and that has to be addressed. That has to be a key thing along the way. And this takes teamwork. This is not something that if you've got one IT guy, yeah, for the whole company, and there's 300 computers and 20 servers and 50 printers, you know, they're going to get burned out because that's too much of an enterprise that's going on with all of that tech. So you have to right size. Maybe it's bringing in another employee. Maybe it's bringing in specialists. Maybe it's whatever. So there's a lot of these different things that we can shift around. Again, we're managing the stress, we're managing that workload, we're managing all of the deadlines carefully, and we have to do that together as teams. Even if the IT guy is one person and he's reporting to the CEO of a company, we have to balance that all on out, and we have to be able to communicate and de-stress that IT guy. Last up, I'm going to talk about the fact that beyond recognizing it, there is professional help out there. There's various therapists and coaches, and they can help with addressing a lot of that. But it still takes a lot of work in between all of the different moving pieces within a company. We have to address this, and we have to make sure that the person who is going through the burnout has the tools available to them. And those tools come through that therapy. They come through coaching. They come through professional help that is outside of themselves. And I'll tell you, as a manager, as an employee, you can only shift some of the workload. You can help recognize the issue, but that professional help, I'm talking, you got to do professionals, not somebody who's in-house, somebody who can be an impartial voice in what's going on and how this all needs to be addressed. Look, burnout is like this dying battery. You can't keep ignoring it without consequences. And by recognizing the signs, by taking the various steps to recharge, IT professionals can maintain a high level of performance and a high level of well-being. See, addressing burnout isn't just about surviving the individual work days, the Monday through Friday. It's about thriving in the business, in the career, and in life. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Microsoft silently erases tip for installing Windows 11 on older PCs. A popular method for bypassing the Windows 11 TPM 2.0 and CPU requirements hardware lock has been removed from official support pages. As the end of support for Windows 10 draws ever closer, Microsoft is taking subtle steps to convince users to buy new hardware. For example, one entry about bypassing the Windows 11 TPM 2.0 hardware lock was quietly removed from a support page spotted by Neowin. Microsoft once explained a popular workaround that allowed older PCs that did not meet Windows 11 requirements to install it anyway by tweaking the registry. The method helped get around the strict TPM 2.0 and CPU requirements. The company expressly warned against using this trick to upgrade incompatible PCs because serious problems can occur if the method wasn't employed properly. They've been saying this for a long time, and they reiterated it again at the end of last year. The registry method still works, though, even if Microsoft no longer provides official tips on how to do it. With this step, Microsoft is once again making it clear they're aware of how easy it is to use Windows 11 on older hardware. However, the aim is to persuade users to buy new PCs that meet the requirements. If you're still on Windows 10, you'll have to weigh your options. You can take the free upgrade to Windows 11 24H2 that Microsoft is offering, but only if your PC is hardware eligible. If yours isn't eligible, you can pay for extended Windows 10 support or move on and buy a new Windows 11 PC, or you can switch to another operating system like one of these Windows-like Linux OSs. Microsoft's free upgrade offer deadline in a blog post. Microsoft has a major problem on its hands. As a fast-approaching deadline for 850 million Windows users to update their PCs looks like becoming an inevitable security nightmare. Those users have been inundated with a combination of warnings and feature promises, but also an implied threat of unexpected costs. And maybe that's why some 40 million holdouts have suddenly upgraded their PCs in the last 31 days. We're talking Windows 11, and the Windows 10 diehards still stubbornly refusing to make the switch. After a steady transition to the newer version of Windows through 2024, Windows 10 reversed that trend in the last 2 months of the year. Not good news for Microsoft, but also for those users facing down October's end of support. Windows 10 users can upgrade to Windows 11 for free if they have a compatible PC with the right security hardware. They can also pay Microsoft a one-off fee of $30 to kick the can down the road for another 12 months to October of 2026. That's all fairly well understood, but Microsoft muddied the pitch last month with a blog post signaling the free upgrade path to Windows 11 could eventually expire. That blog post was deleted for its inaccurate information and a misleading headline, but maybe it had an impact nonetheless. The January stats are now out, and according to StatCounter, the Windows 11 upgrade trend has now unreversed itself, and some 40 million users have switched from Windows 10 over the course of the month, with 2.5% of the overall Windows install base swapping Windows 10 for Windows 11. Microsoft Windows 11 24H2 update now causing Bluetooth and webcam issues. Microsoft, enough is enough. Microsoft Windows 11 24H2 update continues to affect PC users with new Bluetooth and webcam issues. Windows is failing to detect webcam and has audio playback issues on Bluetooth audio devices. The latest KB50-50009, which is 24H2, and KB50-50021, which is 23H2, builds appear to be responsible. It's not a secret that Microsoft Windows 11 24H2 has been a massive problem for plenty of PC users, with bugs and functionality issues present across the board, which has more recently affected gamers, and now it looks like a new set of issues have arrived to cause more frustrations. As reported by Windows Latest, the most recent 24H2 build is leaving users with webcams that aren't being detected and Bluetooth audio devices no longer working even when connected to a system. Windows 11 shows Bluetooth audio devices as connected but without any audio, leaving headphones and more useless for the time being. Windows Latest claims states that this audio issue occurs on both 24H2 and 23H2, along with USB DAC ports not working with the latter. The only fix for the Bluetooth issue, as of now, is uninstalling the recent update, while the webcam problems reportedly require a reinstallation of Windows 11. Considering the effort it takes for both supposed fixes, it might be better to wait for Microsoft to address the matter with a patch. But who knows if that won't introduce new issues as well. If you installed Windows 11 with a USB stick, you can't access any future security updates. The fix is to reinstall Windows 11 with different security updates. With the public launch of Windows version 24H2 last year, came a security issue that was only resolved this week. Those who installed Windows 11 from a media file using the October or November version of the software seemingly cannot access any future security updates, and the solution is a fresh install of just the Windows operating system. As acknowledged in the recent Windows release health update, this security issue was opened on December the 24th of last year and resolved just recently on February the 6th. This issue notes that it happens with those using install media like a CD or USB drive to install Windows 11 files that were distributed in October and November 2024 updates. As a Windows 24H2 update launched in October officially, if you happen to have upgraded as it launched, you will want to get the most recent build and install it. However, if you install 24H2 via the Windows Update tab, your Windows 11 will be able to get security updates as usual. This was resolved as the fix is effectively don't install the Windows 11 updates that have security update issues. Windows security updates are used to fix vulnerabilities in Windows that can be exploited by third parties and can result in stability issues. Getting security updates is a necessary part of the software upkeep of your Windows 11 PC, as going without security updates can put your rig at risk. This is why Microsoft ending support for Windows 10 at the end of the year is a big deal for those who haven't upgraded yet. The longer you go without regular software maintenance, the more risk your system is undertaking. Coincidentally, a brand new workaround to install Windows 11 on devices that don't fit the hardware requirements was created around the launch of 24H2. This means that if you use Rufus or Flyby 11 recently to install Windows 11 on a system incompatible with Microsoft's OS software, you will need to do a clean reinstall in order to fix it. If you have the version of Windows 11 without future security updates, it's pretty simple to update, and you can use the same method you did in the latter half of last year. Just grab the latest version of Windows 11 and install it. Unfortunately, this does mean having to sit through the Windows 11 update screen, but you don't need to remove personal files to do a clean install, so it shouldn't be a huge ordeal. Who at Microsoft ultimately bears responsibility for Windows 11 migration? Windows 11 migration has been marred by poor execution of upgrades and updates. Microsoft has been actively encouraging users to migrate from Windows 10 to Windows 11, especially as the end of support for Windows 10 approaches on October 14th of this year. However, the transition has been met with significant challenges and criticism due to poor execution of upgrades and updates. Some users have reported that their systems updated to Windows 11 without explicit permission. For instance, one user noted that despite declining upgrade offers, their computer updated itself overnight. This has raised concerns about Microsoft's aggressive tactics in pushing the upgrade. A major barrier for many users is the stringent hardware requirements for Windows 11. Devices that fail Microsoft's compatibility tests, such as those with unsupported processors or motherboards, cannot officially upgrade. While some users have explored workarounds, Microsoft has recently ended support for certain hardware bypasses, leaving many systems stuck on Windows 10. Windows 11 has faced criticism for performance problems, such as storage performance degradation under heavy workloads. Microsoft has acknowledged these issues and is reportedly working on fixes. Additionally, some users feel that Windows 10 offers a more efficient and familiar interface, making the upgrade less appealing. Users have expressed frustration with the constant notifications urging them to upgrade to Windows 11. This has led to questions about Microsoft's motivations, with some speculating that the company benefits from having users on the latest operating system due to improved security, telemetry, and ecosystem integration. Microsoft's push for Windows 11 is likely driven by several factors. Security enhancements. Windows 11 introduces stricter security requirements such as TPM 2.0, which are designed to protect against modern threats. Encouraging users to migrate helps Microsoft streamline updates and support, reducing fragmentation across its user base. With Windows 10 support ending in 2025, Microsoft wants to ensure users transition smoothly to avoid security risk. While Windows 11 offers new features and security improvements, the upgrade process has been marred by forced updates, hardware compatibility issues, and performance concerns. For users who are satisfied with Windows 10, there is little immediate need to upgrade, especially since Windows 10 remains functional and supported until late this year. However, as the end of support date approaches, users will need to weigh the options carefully. Who at Microsoft ultimately bears responsibility for the success or failure of the migration process? Leadership at Microsoft should have accountability and is critical in addressing user concerns and ensuring improvements.
Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now, and you've got this thing written down for me, and it says Soka Toa, which immediately my mind goes to like Sacagawea or some other Native American name. I recall something about this.
I can't wait to see the Soka Toa silver dollar. Come on.
Okay. So what are we talking about here?
Well, for those of us who are educated in ancient times.
Yes.
In math class. Soka Toa was a mnemonic, a memory aid. It had to do with trigonometry.
Okay. All right. I never took trig, but okay, go on.
All right. So, S-O-H, sine equals opposite over hypotenuse.
Okay.
Ka, C-A-H, cosine equals adjacent over hypotenuse. Toa, T equals O over A, tangent is the opposite over adjacent.
Okay.
And I remember it to this day because once you remember it, you don't want to have wasted that time.
I understand that. I understand that.
Well, I thought I was done with trig a long time ago, but in the last few weeks, it has raised its ugly head as I was doing some design exercises
that
involve figuring out distances and angles. Now,
okay.
One of them, imagine you've got a light that might be kind of long and thin.
Okay.
Now, that light going straight out from wherever it's mounted does you only so much good. But what if you wanted to deflect it a little and send it to a new target? Okay. How would you do that? Right? I mean, the easiest, you could use a wedge prism, but that would put rainbow lines at the edges. You don't want to do that.
Right. Okay.
How about a mirror? Let's stay with the old technology. How about a mirror?
Yeah, yeah.
But what angle do you put the mirror at? How do you figure that out if you don't actually have everything there, plus a protractor with a third person to measure it?
Yeah,
and then and then you recreate it and found out somebody got something wrong. Those things happen. So I was looking for a way to use trigonometry, and I got a lot of stuff wrong on my first 20 or 30 or 40 passes.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
I also had tried to figure out
something. Was this because you were using a slide rule?
No, I... Okay. slide rules are firewood now.
Okay.
Except the metal ones.
All right.
And no one knows what a slide rule is. That's okay. You probably don't know what a carousel is for a projector either. We forgive you.
That I do know, yeah.
Well, I had to figure out two things. Number one, I had to figure out the difference in angles at the distance. And it has to do not only with tangents, but with the flip of tangents called arc tangents. Okay. Not that an archangel is a flip of an angel or anything, but in this case, it's how you figure it out. And by the way, if you're doing it in Excel like I did, you go through it two or three times before you remember, whoops, Excel works in radians and I'm working in degrees. So that left us to figure out not only the angle that needed to change, but what that means for the mirror angle. Mirrors. I remember mirrors in physics class. And what do they teach you? The angle of incidence is equal to the angle of reflection. Great. More trig, except no. I tried it three times with trig, and you don't get a good answer that way.
Yeah.
The answer happens when you do straight arithmetic. So, that was piece number one. Piece number two. Trying to figure out for a fixed field of view camera lens and a fixed frame that I wanted to include in the image and a known distance, what that camera angle, lens angle should be.
Okay.
And got that wrong a few times. Because when you're dealing with frames now, you're usually getting the diagonal measure and you haven't solved it for the height and the width. And thereby, Excel can lie to you.
Okay.
So trigonometry on that. Then I had a motion sensor and it had a lens on it that restricts its field of view. And I wanted it to look at a particular person and ignore what was in the background, which motion sensors are inherently not good at. Right?
Yeah.
So that was trig again for trying to figure out the beam of the motion sensor, which has a beam width like a camera lens, and the angle I had it mounted at to have it offset by a distance from center. Now, targeting motion sensor, targeting a LiDAR, targeting any other sensor, you can restrict interference by burying it a little bit and putting the walls of the hole around it. So, I'm sorry. I'm not going to tell you I'm good at trig. I'm telling you it beat the heck out of me for the last 3 weeks. But I finally beat it back into submission and somehow I figured it out. And I ran it in reverse to test it, and it came out with the right origin.
All of that math from way back in high school, all of that just arrived back at your brain.
And middle school, too.
Yeah, okay. All right. There we go. Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, February the 13th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. The website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, February the 14th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is limac.org. Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, February the 27th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is bcug.com. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, March the 7th. Meeting time at 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. Tech Ed Connect meets Tuesday, March the 11th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Hybrid meeting. Meeting at the Scarsdale Public Library, located at 54 Olmsted Road, Scarsdale, New York, and online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is wpcug.org. The King's Byte Computer Club meets Tuesday, March the 11th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. at Park Plaza Restaurant, located at 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. Phone number is 347-278-7320. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.